Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.
Good evening, folks. Very welcome along to the Big Red Bench. Before we get started on sport, we have to correct a very, very bad error that just happened at the end of Katie Jane's show. Now, regular listeners to the bench on a Sunday will know that Katie Jane finishes at about 5 to 6 and always ends her show with a slán agus bannocks. However, that did not happen this evening. Katie Jane has remained on to discuss the error, the issue, the massive faux pas that happened. Katie Jane, can you explain yourself, please?
I can't. I actually can't. Now, what I was saying to you is I'm turning a year older during the week, and I think that might have...
Happy birthday.
Yeah, thank you very much.
But we won't ask you your age, because that's impolite.
I'm a lady. I would just like to say, though, will I say it?
Do.
From myself, Katie Jane, slán agus bannocks.
Yes. Now we can start the Big Red Bench. Thanks very much for joining us this Sunday evening. Roy here with you until 7 o'clock, and what an hour of sport we have coming your way on the Big Red Bench. Delighted you could join us for the show. So coming up in the next hour, we're going to talk to Kieran McCarthy, the Southern Star sports editor, about a fantastic day in the water for the Irish rowers and gold medal for the Cork pair, Fintan and Paul. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. Former Ireland international Fiona Hayes will be on to talk about Ireland's fantastic win over Wales yesterday and how it sets them up going into the match against France at the weekend. We're also going to hear from the Ireland captain, Ciara Griffin. We're going to talk to Mark McNulty, the Cork City goalkeeper, about the Focus Ireland sleepout, which is happening later on in the month, and we're going to talk to him about Cork City's start to the season as well. And we're going to talk to the Farris brothers, mostly known for their MMA exploits with SBG Cork City. However, the younger of the brothers, Flubitar Farris, is going to run from Cork to Galway in aid of the Irish Cancer Society at the end of the month. We'll talk to him about that 200-kilometre trek, and we'll talk to his brother Abinoub as well about helping his brother prepare for that gruelling 200-kilometre run, which he's aiming to do in under 40 hours. Absolutely incredible stuff. So all that to come on the Big Red Bench tonight from 6 p.m. Just before we get cracking, going to get you up to date on what's been happening today. Tottenham and Manchester United are level at a goal apiece. 71 minutes on the clock there. This is Andrew Chill's report on Manchester United's equaliser.
Tottenham 1, Manchester United 1. The goal scorer Fred Cavani set it up. He was put through by Pogba. Lovely work by Cavani inside the box. His shot was half saved. Fred with the follow up rifled it into the top of the net. It's no more than United deserved. They've had at least 3 if not 4 good chances before that. Worked the Spurs goalkeeper a couple of times. Lloris was only able to half save this shot from Cavani, and Fred with the follow up makes it Tottenham 1, Manchester United 1.
72 minutes gone at the New White Hart Lane. There elsewhere, a fantastic win for Leicester today, or for West Ham against Leicester, I do beg your pardon, as the Irons look to maintain their push for Champions League football. Fantastic win for Dave Moyes' side. Guy Swindles at the London Stadium.
West Ham 3, Leicester 2. Another thriller from West Ham. The third time recently they've gone 3 up. They've held on for 2 of them and drew the other. This time Lingard, wonderful form since he joined the club, gave them a 2-goal lead at half time. Bowen made it 3 just after the break, cruising, but back came Leicester. Iheanacho, superb up front for them, scored 1 glorious goal after a mistake from Masuaku, and then tucked home in time added on to create a very nervy finish. West Ham also lost Cresswell and Noble to injury. As for Leicester, further inquest into some COVID breaches that upset their preparation. West Ham 3, Leicester 2.
And just on those COVID breaches there that Guy Swindles just mentioned, Leicester boss Brendan Rodgers says he dropped 3 of his players, James Maddison, Jose Perez and Hamza Chowdhury, all absent for the game after they reportedly broke COVID regulations. Now, he wouldn't clarify the details of the breach afterwards, but says he had to take firm action.
Listen, it was something that was a decision I'd made. We had an internal situation last weekend, and it's not a standard that we would expect. They're all good guys, they're all good lads, but we have a standard on and off the pitch that we need to ensure we adhere.
For David Moyes, door cracking result for them. They were 3-0 up. Jesse Lingard, how good has he been since his move to West Ham, scoring twice today, and then they conceded twice to make it a bit of a nervy ending. He says it wasn't an ideal ending.
We should be learning our lesson by now. We've been in front a couple of times in 2 games, so I'm not happy, I'm not pleased with the way it finished, but I'm thrilled about getting 3 points against a very much in form Leicester City team.
Elsewhere, a huge win for Newcastle today in their bid to avoid the drop. Peter Smith reports in their win over Burnley.
Burnley 1, Newcastle 2. Burnley had been in full control. Matej Vidra fired them ahead and they looked odds on for a second. That was until Steve Bruce made a double change on 57 minutes with the introduction of Alan Saint-Maximin, proving an absolute masterstroke. His menace was instant as he set up Jacob Murphy for a leveller before the Frenchman illustrated his stunning individual flair with a brilliant dribble and perfect finish from outside the area. Saint-Maximin securing a first Newcastle win in 8 Premier League games. Burnley 1, Newcastle 2.
Yeah, fantastic win for Steve Bruce's side in their battle to avoid the drop. And this is Bruce on how big that result was.
Well, it's big, of course, but there's still a bit to go. But certainly it's a helping hand. It was a big, important game. We knew that coming into it. So to win it was very, very good.
Now, one last game tonight in the Premier League as well as Sheffield United host Arsenal. That's at 7 p.m. Dave Easton's at Bramall Lane.
It is, of course, just a matter of when, not if, Sheffield United go down. And with 7 defeats in 8 and just 3 goals scored, you can't really see them surprising too many more teams before confirming their spot in the Championship. But here come Arsenal, battered by Liverpool, sloppy against Slavia Prague, facing a week that could finish off their season too. And with a defensive injury crisis, they've not kept a clean sheet in 14. At Bramall Lane, it's Sheffield United against Arsenal.
Yeah, 7 o'clock kick-off time for that one. The Republic of Ireland are in friendly action in just about 25 minutes time. Vera Pauw side facing Belgium and Brussels at 6:30. It's the final day of the Masters at Augusta. Really looking forward to heading home and watching that for the rest of the evening. Japan's Hideki Matsuyama is the man to catch. He is on 11 under par, 4-shot advantage over the chasing pack. Shane Lowry's on the course at the moment. He's 1 over par after his first hole of his final round, and that leaves him in a tie for 35th on the leaderboard at Augusta. In rowing, what a day it has been at the European Rowing Championships in Italy today. Absolutely fantastic stuff. Fintan McCarthy and Paul O'Donovan combining to win gold for Ireland in the lightweight men's double sculls at the European Rowing Championships earlier on today. Incredible stuff. The women's four crew of Afrikyo, Emer Lam, Fiona Murta and Emily Hegarty claiming silver behind the Netherlands, pushing them all the way. And Gary O'Donovan finishing just outside the medals in fourth in the single sculls earlier on today. For more on it, I spoke to Kieran McCarthy, the Sudden Star sports editor, just a short time ago.
For more on a great day of rowing at the European Rowing Championships in Italy, the Sudden Star sports editor and author of Something in the Water, How Skibbereen Rowing Club Conquered the World, Mr. Kieran McCarthy is on the line now. Kieran, how are you, sir?
All good, Rory. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. Mayor, that's an incredible achievement by Fintan and Paul today.
Absolutely awesome to watch the two of them this morning. And to win European gold in what is their third international regatta together, it builds on what this crew has, the potential of this crew, Rory. Go back to 2019, and that was their first year together, and they won world gold. They never raced together in 2020, but they're back in the boat now. Paul and Fintan did a very tough trialing process, but it's Paul and Fintan that are in the double right now. So to go to their first international regatta in the best part of 2 years and put together the performance that they did over the 3 days. On Friday, they won their heat. On Saturday, they won their semi-final. And then today, Sunday, they were absolutely awesome in the final. Another incredible performance. And when you think that there's so much more to come from this Paul and Fintan combination, there's a very exciting summer ahead.
For Paul to go from rowing with his brother to rowing with a new partner, Kieran, just how big a change is that, and how impressive is it that it's resulted in European gold so quickly?
Like, if you ever talk to Gary and Paul over the years, like, there's absolutely no emotion attached to rowing. You know, whoever's fastest gets in the boat. So the fact is, it's Paul and Fintan, that wouldn't bother Paul one bit, because what Paul wants at the end of the day, he wants Olympic gold. And if Fintan is the better option, or for him to achieve that, Paul just gets on the board and he gets on with business. And the two of them work really, really well together, Paul and Fintan. And we saw that again this weekend by them winning the European gold. But like I said, there's the Olympics are what? They're 100 days away around that at this stage, Rory. So we're getting closer and closer to the big event. And there's a reason why Paul and Fintan are one of the big favourites for Olympic gold in the lightweight men's double. We saw that today in Italy when they won the gold. Like, it'll take a very, very good crew to stop them. And what's going to be very interesting now, it's because the trialing process is over. And at the moment, it is Paul and Fintan in that boat. Rowing Ireland, the whole gang is staying over in Italy for the next couple of weeks. They're going to stay over in until the World Cup 2 in Lucerne in mid-May. So what that means is Paul and Fintan are going to get 5 or 6 weeks together in the boat to work on their partnership. So that's over in Italy, good weather, flat water, like I said, uninterrupted time together. So by the time they hit World Cup 2 in Lucerne in mid-May, they should be motoring even better again.
As you said, it's going to take a lot for them to be beaten at the Olympics. Is there now going to be a lot of pressure and expectation on them heading into the Games? And is that something that they are expecting and are going to be used to? Or is it something that's going to affect them?
It's going to be water off the duck's back. If anyone, like Paul O'Donovan, I put out a tweet earlier saying like he's one of the greatest sports people that Ireland has ever had. And he is. Like, he's only 26 years of age. He doesn't turn 27 till later this month. And he's an Olympic silver medalist, a four-time world champion, now a two-time European champion. The man doesn't feel pressure at all. He's just such a calm demeanour. And he's just going to get on with it. He wants that Olympic gold. And it's going to take a very, very good crew to stop him. With Fintan in the boat now, it's just a very exciting combination. I was chatting to Fintan last week before they headed off to Italy, and exciting is the word that Fintan used when he was talking about the next couple of weeks and the next couple of months. He said himself and Paul are seeing gains in the boat every day, and at the moment they want to make that boat better every day. And if you look at them at the Europeans now, where they won world gold, they beat a good German crew, a good Italian crew, and they're going to get better and better and better. Like I said, Tokyo could be the crowning glory in this amazing Ghibreen rowing story.
And we know all about Paul, of course, but Fintan, obviously the lesser known of the duo for the time being anyway. The way things are going, he'll be equally as famous as Paul. But what can you tell us about him? What kind of character is he?
Fintan is, he's also from the same parish as Gary and Paul, and Fintan is a twin, because Fintan and Jake McCarthy are two twins. And interestingly enough, the four lads from Athlone, you had Paul and Gary and Fintan and Jake, they were the four men that were in the trialling process for the lightweight men's double. So it just goes to show that Skibbereen Rowing Club produces world-class elite-class rowers. So Fintan McCarthy, an interesting kind of little anecdote about him, Rory, is go back 5 years ago to Friday, August 12th, 2016, and that was the day when Gary and Paul won Olympic silver over in Rio. And Fintan was 19 at the time. He was watching the Olympic final in the Paragon Bar inside in Skibbereen. And he was looking up at the big screen after Gary and Paul won silver. And remember, that was Ireland's first ever Olympic rowing medal. And Fintan was thinking to himself, Jesus, there are two fellas from the same parish as me. They're in the same club as me. I do the same training program as them. I train in the same club as them. I have the same coach as them in Dominic Casey. So if they can do it, why can't I do it? And 5 years later, it's Fintan in that boat beside Paul O'Donovan, and they're gunning for Olympic glory. So it's been an incredible rise by Fintan. Go back to 2019. That's the year when Fintan ousted Gary out as a double. And Fintan and Paul had two regattas that year. They got a silver in World Cup 2 in Amsterdam, and then they won the world gold and also qualified the boat for the Olympics. So Fintan is slotted right in there. He's doing a superb job. And today was another, and it just showed that Paul and Fintan together work. And it's one of many incredible stories, Rory, from the European Championships. One of the big stories too is that the women's four won a silver medal today, which was incredible, because there's two more boats looking to qualify for the Olympics later in the year. That's the women's four and that's the lightweight women's double. And both those boats had excellent European regattas. That women's four, and it includes Emily Hegarty from Skibbereen, they won silver today, and that's a huge result for them, because the final Olympic qualification regatta is in Lucerne in May, so they're going to be high in confidence going towards that.
Yeah, and they pushed that Netherlands crew all the way today in that final, didn't they?
100%. It was really impressive, and they did a very good regatta. And even towards the end of that race, if there was another 100, 200 metres, what's not to say that that Irish crew couldn't have won that race, because they were closing in on the Netherlands. It was very, very exciting. But it's just the confidence I think they're going to get off that. So coming off the Europeans with a silver medal, they now have this long camp together in Italy. So hopefully by the time they get to the final Olympic qualification regatta in Lucerne, they'll be in tip-top shape and ready to take one of the few places that are up for offer there. And it's the same with the lightweight women's double pairing. It's an all-Cork pairing. It's Mags Crimmin from Rochestown and Aoife Casey from Skibbereen. They had another excellent regatta. They finished fifth in the A final earlier today. And they're a very young crew, Rory. Mags is 22, Aoife is 21. So there's a lot more to come from them. they also have that final Olympic qualification regatta in Lucerne in May. There's two places up for grabs there. That's all that's left to get into the Tokyo Olympics. But I think Aoife and Mags, they look back at Europeans as progress, mm-hmm. because if we look at last year's Europeans, they finished 8th overall. This year they finished 5th, so they're moving in the right direction. So very, very exciting times ahead.
Certainly so. And Gary finishing 4th today as well. Will he be disappointed by that, or is it a case that his singles career is still a work in progress?
I think it's still a work in progress. If you're talking about the kind of singles colour, Paul would be a lot better than Gary. Like I said earlier, Paul is probably the greatest roar that Ireland has ever had. So for Gary to finish 4th, it isn't the worst result in the world at all. He was a bit off the pace through the first 1500 metres. He was in 6th place. He made his move in the final 500 metres, but it was too little too late. The top three crews were well gone by then. But he'll take confidence from that 4th place finish. And what he's trying to do is he wants to put pressure on Paul and Fintan in the double, because as of yet the Olympic crews won't be confirmed probably till the summer. You're talking June, I think. So Gary is still in the hunt there, but he has to dislodge one of Paul and Fintan, and to be quite honest, that's looking like a really big ask now, especially after what Paul and Fintan pulled out earlier today.
And final question, Kieran, does Paul's luxurious hair get its own medal?
That's an incredible head of hair, isn't it? He's after, I think he started feeling the lockdown more than most with the barbers being shut, but it's an incredible head of hair, but it's almost like Samson at this stage.
Oh, as long as
he gets the results, don't cut the hair, Paul.
Certainly. So you can get more on the fantastic day of the European Rowing Championships in the Southern Star. Kieran, thanks very much for talking to us today.
Thanks, Rory.
Oh, it was a pleasure talking to our good friend Kieran McCarthy from the Southern Star, and what a day of rowing it has been, and what a head of hair it is on Paul O'Donovan. I am incredibly, incredibly envious. While that interview was being played, I heard a scream coming from the office. I'm in a soundproof studio and I still manage to hear the scream, and that scream was from Conor Halpin, who presents Green on Red, which is coming up tonight from 7 to 10 with 3 hours of the best Irish music. He is a Manchester United fan, so it was safe to presume Manchester United had scored, and they had.
Tottenham 1, Manchester United 2. No more than United deserve. They've been a much improved side in the second half. This goal, the goal this time from Cavani, who had one controversially chalked off early on. Lovely cross with his left foot by Greenwood, way out on the right hand side. Cavani with a diving header left Lloris no chance whatsoever. It's Tottenham 1, Manchester United 2.
Only have half an eye on it, but it looks like a really good and really enjoyable game. End to end stuff for Manchester United, just kind of eking out there, are just kind of become the dominant force throughout the second half, for certainly finishing stronger than Tottenham, who've brought Gareth Bale on as well. But enjoyable stuff there so far at the New White Hart Lane. About 3 minutes left to go of normal time, plus whatever the referee adds on there. Yesterday, a fantastic win for the Ireland women's team as they beat Wales 45 points to nil in their opening Six Nations game. For more on it, I spoke to former Ireland international winner of the Six Nations in 2013 and 2015, Fiona Hayes. Okay, for more on Ireland's fantastic win over Wales, and joined in line now by Fiona Hayes. Fiona, how are you?
I'm good. Delighted yesterday with the win myself. An absolute cracking game of rugby to watch.
It was incredible. I mean, like, to put 45 points on the board, did you see that happening in advance of the game?
I didn't, to be honest with you. I felt like Ireland were definitely going to win it. I'd watched Wales and France the week before, and it was a very poor performance by Wales. And part of me thought, you know, that maybe Ireland might face a bit of backlash the following week as Wales were at home, as we know. But absolutely amazing performance from Ireland. But I must draw attention, like, to the fact Wales actually had 43 missed tackles in the game. Mm-hmm. So definitely, I'd say they have a lot to go over in at the minute after that. But that doesn't take away from Ireland's performance. It seems everything seemed to click, and as I said, I thought it would be a win, but not by that many points anyway.
What was the most pleasing aspect of Ireland's performance yesterday?
For me, it was definitely that interlinking between the backs and forwards. We'd seen Ireland maybe for the last year or so trying to get that game up and running and have that multiple lines of attack going where the forwards were putting it out the back and all that, but it wasn't seem to be working. But we definitely think It definitely worked in the game there against Wales, and the 20 camps that they've had in the build-up and all that really, really showed on the pitch. And I suppose from my point of view, it was really pleasing watch how they clicked. And another big thing with me was the set piece. pace before. We weren't seeming to nail that down. Lineouts were going astray. Scrums were hit and miss, whereas I'd say percentages were very, very high successfully rating for the lineout and scrum. So that was, I'm a prop by trade, so it was really pleasing for me to see that going really well for Ireland.
Yeah, and some fantastic individual performances yesterday as well from the likes of Considine and Parsons, who had excellent games.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, everyone, the big talk up in the lead up to the game was Fabian Parsons, and absolutely did not disappoint. And I'd say Eimear Considine fends the pressure because she wasn't far behind her in footwork and scoring tries. The two of them were absolutely amazing. Eimear from full back, they linked up really well together as well. Eimear put Bavin away a few times. But for me, another pleasing aspect was Munster's Dorothy Wall. After the game, I had a look at her stats, you know, and she'd actually 24 carries in the game and made 8 successful tackles. That's absolutely a monster performance for someone who's so young. I think she's 20 years of age or 21. So to see that, side of the game, she was playing 6 as well, and the performance she put in, I suppose, created the platform for the girls to score out wide.
Possibly a bit of an odd question considering they put 45 points on the board, but are there areas in which Ireland can improve for the next game?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they were 31-0 up at half time, and I suppose they'll have to look at there was probably about a 25-minute lull there where there was a lot of errors after half time. We expected them to kick on and be a bit more ruthless. I was thinking it could have been up in the 60s or 70s. Seeing how they played in the first half, but in all credit to the Wales, they did come out and defended a bit better in the second half. But I suppose Ireland would have to look at those errors really, and you know, they weren't under much pressure in the first half scoring those tries, and when the pressure came on, that's when we saw a few handling errors. So I'd say this week they'll definitely be kind of looking at that and putting a pressure defence in training, because the French have absolutely manic line speed. They've really come up, and they definitely won't be missing 43 tackles, so it's something that Ireland will have to work on a little bit this week.
I suppose considering they were 31 up at half time, it's probably understandable that, I suppose, Ireland's intensity kind of dropped off in the second half a bit.
Yeah, well, that's it. But then on the other side, you know, the best teams in the world are ruthless, and you know, the All Blacks including, and everyone. When you're 31 points up and you can come out in the second half and kick on and continue that scoring form, that's kind of what makes a great team. But that's not taken away from Ireland at all. They kind of pulled themselves together for the last. There was a lot of subs came on. The bench was cleared. I think everyone got at least 15 or 16 minutes. And some of the young talents that came onto the pitch absolutely lifted that game as well. We had Emily Lane from Cork came in at 9, and the speed just for the last 10, 15 minutes, she fired those forwards all around the pitch, and it was really, really good to see. And she's such an exciting prospect now on the bench. A little like Craig Casey with Munster comes on to absolutely fire them around and pick up that speed of the game.
It sets up an intriguing clash now against France next Saturday afternoon, and what should be an absolute cracker.
Yeah, definitely. I think people didn't even really think that. A lot of people outside of the rugby circle wouldn't have thought that Ireland had a hope against a French or an English team. And I think this is kind of really, you know, stuck home that we're definitely in with a chance. I mean, the confidence of the girls will be so high after this. And as I said, the rugby they played was so exciting. Multiple lines of attack, that interlinking. And it's definitely, if they can keep that set piece and nail it, I definitely think they can have a crack off France at home.
And the buzz in the camp this week after that big win over Wales will be something else. So they're certainly going to go into the game high on confidence on Saturday.
Yeah, definitely. I coached the captain, Kira Griffin, and she just texted me saying after the game, saying, you know, she's such a smile in her face and she's absolutely loving her rugby right now. And I was so excited for her because it's probably been, they've been under a lot of stick for the last few years on their performances, and to know that they are out there training and enjoying it, and this will give them the little boost that they need. And you know, I think that's all they needed was that big win, and this is it. So definitely going to be an exciting prospect going into next week's game.
Was it a little bit disappointing that yesterday's game clashed with the Leinster game, and maybe a lot of eyes that would have been on the Ireland game were lost to the Leinster game?
Yeah, that was definitely, I suppose, disappointing. I actually had the both of them on, I had the women's on the telly and the Leinster on my phone. I was curious, and that was another great game to watch. But yeah, definitely disappointed. But I suppose it's all kind of got to do with, we don't know what's going on in other countries and travelling over and back in restrictions. So I would imagine it kind of, that Ireland flew out the day before, and I know that they had to probably come back the same day, you know, because some of them aren't fully professional. So it's kind of those little things that get in the way, but definitely disappointing. And we have, I think it's next Saturday at maybe 2 or 2.30 the kickoff is, so hopefully there'd be no crossover there, which I don't know when the Leinster game is, but the more eyes on the game, because they definitely missed out on watching amazing rugby last weekend if you missed that game.
Yeah, and something I noticed as well is that the build up to this, and I suppose the amount of column inches that the women's team have gotten, and all the exposure that they've gotten and coverage they've gotten has been greatly increased this time around, I feel.
Yeah, definitely. I suppose when they play together, you're looking at the media, you're looking at the 20s, they're looking at the women a small bit, and then you've got the men's senior team are probably going to take up the main focus of all those Six Nation weekends. So the format was changed this year just due to COVID, and it's probably suiting the female side of rugby an awful lot, really, because exactly what you said, they're getting that more coverage, you know, their whole Instagram account is about the women's team, the build-up, how the pre-match stuff is going. So I think people are getting excited and reading it in the papers and seeing the ads on television. RT covering it is excellent, and I think when people see ads or read it on the paper, or they might just switch over, turn on and watch it, and then they can see, and their perceptions of women's rugby for some people might actually change.
Yeah, hear. Fiona, thanks very much for talking to us on the Big Red Bench this evening. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Absolutely not. Hopefully a win for Ireland now next week, and we'll be
flying. Fingers crossed. Thanks, Fiona. Yeah, absolutely fantastic to speak to Fiona Hayes today about that fantastic win for Ireland yesterday, 45-0. Great start. And it sets up that cracking clash with France next Saturday afternoon. Just as a disappointment, or disappointing, as I mentioned there to Fiona, that it did clash with that Leinster High Champions Cup clash yesterday, which was disappointing. But great to see so much exposure for the Irish women's team this week. Manchester United are 3-1 up now on Tottenham. Mason Greenwood has added a third for the Red Devils, deep into injury time, just waiting on the referee's whistle to blow there. We heard Fiona mention that she was texting Ciara Griffin, the Ireland captain, a short time ago about yesterday's win. Going to hear from Ciara just a little bit from her press conference after the game yesterday.
Yeah, look, Gavin, that's been our focus for the last few weeks building up. We want to start quick, start fast, and just play at our tempo and put our stamp on the game. And I think, look, credit to the girls, to everyone out there, you know, everyone knew your role, everyone executed. There was a hunger there. You could see there was a real hunger in the group. And that just gave us that platform to play that attacking side of rugby for that first half and for the rest of the game.
The fear was that because you haven't played a test match, you wouldn't be able to do that. But did you have a suspicion that you were going to do it? Was the hunger that strong?
Yeah, it is. Look, you know, we were confident in ourselves as a group in terms of our the work we've done in camps and at trainings. Like, we've pushed ourselves to a different intensity level, and that kind of showed out there today in terms of, you know, fitness and work rate on the ball and everything. It just gave us that good platform to work off.
Sorry for being a spoil sport, but give us your take on the second half, will you?
Yeah, look, sport is fickle, isn't it? We had a very good, look, we still got 45 points, you know, we'd be happy any day, 45, and not leaving anything in either. That was a big thing for us to protect our try line. After such a long break from matches, you're going to have a bit of rustiness or, you know, bits of errors. But look, I'm happy it happened this week, to be honest. We've a lot to learn from that in terms of what we did well, but the areas you need to kind of tighten up on for next week. But it's definitely putting us in a good position going forward.
What was the most pleasing aspect of the performance, in the sense that what kind of came that you weren't sure you had, or you were trying to show, or what kind of came out today that you can really stand over?
Yeah, I think a big thing showed our hunger, and our hunger on both sides of the ball. You know, we weren't just going through the phases. We were working to get there first. We wanted to win that race on both sides. You could see that on both sides, and that was really pleasing to me. And I think everyone's never say never attitude, and no one stepped off. Everyone kept going to the last minute. So we're all really, really happy. Yeah, geez, yeah. I kind of didn't know what was happening there. No, it was, look, that's our defensive policy: put pressure on the ball, and thankfully it worked out. there was great support lines in from the rest of the pack and the rest of the players coming through. So that was a real team try.
Yeah, it's Ireland captain Ciara Griffin there speaking after yesterday's fantastic win over Wales, and we'll have a reaction on the game against France on the Big Red Bench next Saturday. Valerie will be there for us on next Saturday's show, so we'll have all the best reaction coming up on Saturday's Big Red Bench. Alright, full time at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. A good win for Manchester United today over Tottenham. Andrew Cheel.
Tottenham Hotspur 1, Manchester United 3, a deserved win for United, who were frustrated at having an early Cavani goal ruled out by VAR. Son, at the centre of that controversy, then put Spurs ahead. Fred levelled for a much improved United following up a half-saved Cavani shot, and it was Cavani who scored a late diving header from an excellent Greenwood cross. Greenwood added number 3 in injury time. There will be much discussion about the VAR decision, but Edinson Cavani has the last word. Tottenham Hotspur 1, Manchester United 3.
Right, still to come on the Big Red Bench tonight, we are going to talk to Cork City goalkeeper Mark McNulty, and we're going to talk to the young Cork man who's going to run from Cork to Galway non-stop as he raises funds for the Irish Cancer Society.
The Big Red Bench. Game on. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m.
Rory here with you on the bench until 7. Now, a young Cork man is aiming to create history by becoming the youngest person to run from Cork to Galway. Flibbertar Farras is going to do the run at the end of April, a distance of 200 kilometres. He'll be assisted by his brother Abinoub in the challenge. It's being done to raise funds for the Irish Cancer Society. I am tired just reading that sentence out loud. I spoke to the Farras brothers earlier on today. Okay, we're joined on the line now by our two Cork brothers who might be just the fittest Cork men in Cork at the moment, Flibbertar and Abinoub Farras. Lads, how are you?
We're doing good. How are you?
Not too bad.
Good, man. Good. We'll get on, Flibbertar, I suppose, to your massive challenge that's coming up shortly. But lads, can you give us a bit of your history, I suppose, in combat sports and, I suppose, how you've gotten to this stage, I guess?
So when I was 12 years old, I joined MMA because my older brother was doing it, and It's been going so well. We're both on the Irish team right now. I've been doing it for 5 years. He's been doing it for 10, and it's going well right now.
I started off in MMA, so our background was in that, and I kind of progressed him into it, and then he fell in love with running. So it kind of ended up here in a funny situation. Kind of which sport do we love more? So it's a hard one. But it's obviously MMA, but it's still. We're kind of on the confused side of things more than anything at this stage.
And lads, I suppose, what is it about MMA that kind of stuck with you and kind of got you hooked and obsessed, I guess?
I think it's just like training, you know, it's just something, it's a challenge basically. It's hard to train for like 8 weeks and then go into a fight and try to win it. It's a tough challenge, and we just liked it.
The adrenaline rush more than anything. Absolutely addicted to that. The challenge part of it's the biggest one, but the adrenaline rush that you get like in training and you get during the fight and the whole lead up towards the fight, it's amazing. You'd absolutely love it. Like,
and when that cage door shuts, that feeling, I suppose, can't be compared.
Oh, there's no comparison to it, because you'd be nervous before it, and then when the cage door shuts, you're just like, all the nerves are gone. You feel like you're the baddest man on the planet after that.
Yeah.
How have you found the last year with, I suppose, the gym being closed and kind of being separated from your teammates and having to train on your own?
It was tough. Last year, I done my first 100 kilometres. That was when I was 16. And it was tough. Lockdown was kind of, it was tough training when not in the gym. I started jogging. I done 50 kilometres at the really start. And I was like, this is not bad. I can go for 100. I done the 100, and then I'm here right now trying to do 200.
Was it just pure soul boredom in lockdown? Did you decide to start running? I mean, you are, so obviously we're always running as part of your MMA training. But like building up the endurance and going for longer and longer, was it just pure boredom just to get out of the house and something to do?
It actually happened that I was bored in my house, and I went for I was meant to be going for a 5 kilometer jog. And it turned out that I'd done 30, but I didn't. I just didn't even think. I just went for 30, and I rang it was like my first time doing 30 kilometers. And I rang my brother. I was like, "Here, I'm after doing 30 kilometers. Look at this, blah blah blah." And then the week later, we're like, "Here," I was like, "I can do 50. Like, let's do it." Then I'd done 50, and then 2 weeks later, I was like, "Here, I can do the 100." So I done the 100, but I didn't really prepare much for the 100. So for this 200, I prepared a lot for it, and I will get it done.
100 was definitely a lot harder because it was literally just off, like, there was no training. It was just like, within 2 weeks, we were like, all right, let's just go for it. He decided he was going to do 100, and I was like, I'm not going to leave him do it on his own. So I was like, feck it. Might as well cycle behind him and spot him the whole way up. And it was just madness. Like, and he still scored it on a really good time as well. Like, so it was good. He got it in like...
I got it in 9 hours, 23 minutes or 24 minutes, roughly something like that.
For the whole 100K, which was really good for like someone that didn't train at all. For that, for ultra running specifically.
Yeah. So how has training, I suppose, like for people who don't know, you're going to run from Cork to Galway at the end of the month, and you're going to become the youngest person to do that. It's 200 kilometres. You're hoping to do it in, I believe, is it about 40 hours?
Under 40 hours, hopefully, yeah.
So what, I mean, like, what's a training week like to run this ultra endurance like challenge, basically? Yeah.
So I have Sundays off always, and I have like a hard running session and then a light running session, hard running session, light running session. And then on Friday night, I do roughly 30 to 40 kilometers, and I'd go back, I'd sleep for 2 hours. And then on Saturday, roughly about 3 a.m., I'd do another 40. It's called like something called a back-to-back run, just so I get used to get going in and out. So when I'm in the camper van, I could start getting used to going in and out running.
And then during the week, then he'd build up a lot of his speed training and stuff. Yeah. He'd be on the track doing a lot of sprints. You get like 3 10Ks in a week. So 3 10K runs during the week, 1 endurance, and then he does the back-to-back twice as well.
Yeah.
And I suppose it's very much an individual thing you're doing. I mean, like, compared to the team training aspect of MMA, I mean, like, what's been the biggest challenge?
I think the biggest challenge is... it's in my head, like, because it's tough to say, oh, I'm actually going to run. Like, I say to myself, like, I'd be like, I'm actually running 200 kilometers. Like, I'm running to Cork to Galway. I think the biggest thing is not the actual training. It's my in my head, like, I, my head needs to be 100% for me to do this run, like.
And Abinu, do you have a kind of role then, just kind of keeping him motivated and kind of encouraging him to train every day when, I suppose, there's some days where he's kind of going, maybe I'm not feeling it today?
Yeah, like at the end of the day, he's still only 17. So most 17-year-olds don't want to train every day. With him, he does want to train every day. But there's obviously the off days where he doesn't want to train. So I'd have to pick him up, go down. If we're going down to the track, make sure he does all his sprints. If he's going out for a run, like, obviously I'm not at a high level that he's at when it comes to running. But if he's running any like short 10-kilometer runs or something like that, I can kind of do them with him. Mm-hmm. But the back-to-backs and stuff, I can't do it with him, but I'm always on the bike, kind of spotting him, making sure he's getting his snacks in every 30 minutes, he's hydrating properly, just like lightly coaching him. He kind of knows everything true, but just keeping him motivated really is kind of like the key aspect with this.
Flubert, I was just about to say, like, how important is it to have your brother there, someone like just to help you and motivate you and kind of give you that little bit of encouragement when things maybe like you might be thinking like I can't do this today?
To be honest, I honestly think if I didn't have my brother, I wouldn't be where I am right now. Like, I only started doing running and all this over MMA because I was fit in MMA, and I wouldn't have joined MMA if my brother wasn't there. So I think the biggest thing, like, my brother's been helping me since I'm 12, started sports, and I think he's a big aspect for this run.
Yeah, exactly. And Abinu, I suppose, are you going to be doing the whole 200K with him on the bike, or how's it going to work?
Yeah, so I'm hoping to run maybe 80 kilometers out of the 200, and then the rest I'll kind of I'll cycle. Obviously not 80 straight. I'm still not that good, but you know, I'll break down 80s. I'll do 20 at 10. I'll take a break, jump on the bike, but I'll be always with him. I'll either be running it or I'll be on a bike with him. But I don't want to do too much because I'll be the person whinging next to him when I'm struggling to run. So I was like, I'll leave off trying to run a lot of it.
And Flubert, are you listening to like music and podcasts and stuff when you're running, or is it just solely focused on the run?
I think for this run, I shouldn't be 100% focused. Like, I shouldn't be just like, oh, I'm running 200 kilometers, just focusing. Like, I think whatever you're doing, MMA, running, like, you have to have a bit of fun with it. So I want to have fun when I'm running this. I don't want to be focused on the 200. Like, I'm going to finish it, but have a bit of fun with it. I usually listen to music or have a chat with my brother, or I'd put on a David Goggins podcast or something like that.
Has this challenge been done much before by other people?
I'm not even sure. Ireland, I'm certainly, I don't think so. I'm 90% sure no one done this
before. I was on to Athletics Ireland. I was on to the CEO. So there was no one that actually ran 100 kilometers at the age of 16. Wow. And there's no one that's ever ran 200K at the age of 17. Under 18, there's never been something like that. But the only problem with Ireland is they don't... So they don't record any of this simply because it's ultra running and they don't want to promote such an enduring sport at such a young age. Because let's be realistic, there's a lot of bad impacts that you can get from running this. There's a lot of injuries you can pick up. Mm-hmm. It's not the safest thing to do, running a long distance under 18, you know. So he's already broken a record already. And he's going to break the second one. There's no one actually has attempted it because it's never been recognized properly yet. But when he's over 18, there's a couple more recognized records that he could break.
Maybe double 200 or something.
Maybe 400. Who knows?
this run's not going to, like, I've been saying, like, I'm 100% with MMA. Like, I love MMA more than running. But this, like, I'm only 17. I'm doing this 200 kilometers. Next year when I'm 18, I'm probably going to try to do 300. Like, I love the challenge. There's a lot to come. There's a lot to come.
I want to say that, like, I don't want to look too far beyond this because it's an incredible challenge coming up, the 200K to Galway. But when travel restrictions are lifted and you're able to fly internationally again, are you looking at like ultra marathon races in the States or around the world?
I'd run anywhere, to be honest. If I could go abroad and run somewhere. I love going abroad too. I love, you know, I fought a couple of times abroad. So I love the feeling of going abroad, all getting ready, all like the training, all that. I'd love that, yeah.
And I suppose, like, going back to MMA then as well, all this endurance running is going to have a massive effect, I'd imagine, on your cardio for when you do go back fighting.
Yeah, I was thinking, I was literally just saying it to my brother last night. A whole fight, a whole fight is like 9 minutes, 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm like, this really is nothing to me. I'm going to be, actually, after this run, I'm going to be flying out to Turkey for the World Championships in MMA, July. Mm-hmm. So I was like, this is going to be, this run, like, it's going to help a lot too with this.
Exactly. And have you found your fitness gone up as well, kind of out running and on a bike with him and helping him prepare?
Oh yeah, definitely. Like, just trying to keep up with him, it's just like my cardio has skyrocketed. And the biggest thing as well, I actually, because he started doing all this, I'm obviously cycling behind him. I actually started falling in love with cycling. So I'm starting to do crazy cycles as well. So because of him, I've actually found another passion in another sport that I like. I think we just love endurance training. We just love the grind and the intensity of, like, hard training. So running, cycling, MMA, it's just a grinding sport. You just either love it or you hate it. It's one or the other.
Yeah, and you certainly love it. So, I mean, like, you've obviously, like, planned the route and stuff out like that as well. And have you been able to, I suppose, with travel restrictions, you haven't been able to, I suppose, drive the route and have a look at it. Like, but you've obviously got it all planned out and ready to go.
Yeah, my brother actually recycled the route. He cycled the full route just to get used to the road and tell him, like, if there's, like, a hill on this certain side or something like that. So that's good.
I went up to Galway, I cycled it twice. And I might mapped it out. So we're going through from here directly to Limerick City, from Limerick City to Clare County, in through 6 Mile Bridge, just like the back roads around. It's just the safest way to go, kind of. There's not a lot of traffic. And then from there, we're going to Gort, and then from Gort to Oranmore, and Oranmore to Galway City. Mm. So we're kind of going in around the back routes just because we don't want to be caught in any traffic and even be running through the night. So that's kind of, it's going to be, safety is going to be a big key for this as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, like, you're obviously running on, like, very busy main roads as well, or are you going to try and stick to the back roads?
Exactly. I'm going to be trying to stick to the back roads for most. If I can do it for all of it, I'd do it for all of it. But it just, it, I don't want, at the same time, I don't want to be like stopping traffic. You know, I'm like, I'm going to be doing 200K. I'm just focusing on my 200. I'm not going to be caring about a car behind me or something. At the same time, I don't want to be stopping traffic. So I'd rather go on the back roads.
Are you nervous about this? I mean, like, is there an apprehension about it? Or are you just going to put one foot in front of the other and go?
I haven't gotten nervous for anything in a very, very long time. Like, I've been fighting for 5 years. My past, like, 6 fights, it's nothing to me now. I'm like, two and a half weeks out, and I'm feeling nervous already. Like, it's probably one of the biggest challenges I've had in my life so far. So, the nerves are kicking in, all right, yeah.
Haven't you been nervous for him?
Yeah, naturally, I get more nervous for things that he does. More like, if it's something with me, I don't really care. Like, what's the worst that can happen? Like, so it doesn't really bother me. But when it comes to him, yeah, I'm definitely getting a bit nervous, especially getting closer to it. But nerves are a good thing as well, in one way.
Exactly. So, what day are you going to head out? So,
I'm not exactly sure. It's going to be the last week of April, but I can't. I'm going to see in the next couple of days, just due to the weather, because I don't want to be running. I don't want to set a date, and then if it's raining that day, I have to do it. So it's going to be roughly, I'd say, last couple of days of April, but I'm not exactly sure what day exactly.
Just hoping for dry weather, so.
Really hoping for dry weather. Yeah. I've done the 100 kilometers in pissing rain, and it was not good. I do not want to be doing that again.
The whole run was in literally like hailstones. It was.
I was like, I'd rather do the 200 nice in Camden.
He basically got pneumonia from it. It was crazy.
Like. You were saying to me as well that there might be a charity aspect to this run as well.
There is indeed, yeah. So he'll be raising money for the Irish Cancer Society, and we have we've set up a page. Where people can go donate. It's available in all of our social media platforms. There's a link in the bio in all of our social media platforms. If anybody hits that link, it'll bring them directly to that page, and they can donate whatever they can from there. Because we're just trying to raise as much money as we can for them, really.
Excellent. Guys, it's been a pleasure. It's been actually inspirational talking to you today. It's going to encourage me to go over at least for a walk this afternoon, considering what you've been doing. Very best of luck with this. This is absolutely fascinating, and I'm sure you're going to smash that 40-hour target that you've got, and very best of luck with it. And keep us posted, and we might have a chat after you complete it in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you very much.
Amazing. Thanks, Rory. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that was really interesting chat there with the Farrah's brothers, Flubertar Farrah's and Abilene Farrah's, about Flubertar's run at the end of April. And raising funds for the Irish Cancer Society as well. We're going to tweet out the link for that in just a bit. So, very best of luck to Flubertar. It's an incredible thing he's attempting to do. And to run 200 kilometres from Cork to Galway in under 40 hours will be sensational. So the very, very best luck indeed to him. And we'll get Flubertar and Abinubon after they complete the challenge at the end of the month. Right, going to switch your attention now. And the Big Rebel Sleepout in aid of Focus Ireland is taking place on April 24th, which is this year will be simulated due to the pandemic. It's to raise vital funds to tackle homelessness in Cork, and people are being encouraged to sleep out in their back gardens and to raise money as well. For more information, you can visit focusireland.ie, redfm.ie or corkcityfc.ie. For more on it, I spoke to City goalkeeper Mark McNulty. Mark, this sleepout happening on April 24th, just under 2 weeks' time, and it's a big fundraiser for Focus Ireland and a very important event.
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant, you know, like, and it's a great thing that Cork City are getting involved in, you know. It's I remember doing the sleepout last year, and I had a tent up in my back garden with all the kids in there, and you know, it was a bit of crack in that, like, and you know, listen, if it's helping people, then why not? It's a great thing to be able to do. And you know, especially Focus Ireland, they're so good for the homeless in Cork and in the country, I suppose, you know. So listen, any little thing like that will always help.
So how did you find it sleeping out last year? I mean, like, last year was done virtually, this year it's going to be done virtually as well because obviously of the COVID-19 pandemic. How did you find sleeping out the back garden in a tent with your kids in the middle of April?
Do you know what? No, it was actually quite enjoying. The kids absolutely loved it, you know, just getting out like that, like, and don't get me wrong, come 11, 12 o'clock, I was hoping that they might say, ah, Dad, we want to go in, but no, they were loving it. And you know, there was four of us packed into a two-man tent. So the kids enjoyed it, and no doubt we'll do the same again this year. You know, we did, like I said, the two-man tent out the back, and we'll give it a go again this year, you know. it's like I said earlier, it's a great thing to, for Cork City to be able to do and to get funds for Focus Ireland. So listen, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's happening on April 24th. If you want more details on that, you can visit focusireland.ie and search for the Big Rebel Sleepout. And of course, stay tuned to Cork's FM for more details. Mark, while I have you, disappointing night last night against Athlone Town. Just that bit of luck is what you're currently lacking, because overall, I thought you played very well last night.
Yeah, to be fair, I think out of the three games so far, is definitely our best performance. You know, you can see what Colin's trying to bring to the team. You know, I think we're a lot better on the ball. We're a lot more composed, you know, playing from the back or for playing in the final third. I think we're a lot better on the ball. Like you said there, it's just at the minute we're a bit unlucky. That bit of luck doesn't go away, you know. Up in Cabinteely, I felt we should have won the game. We were a far better side, but we just didn't take our chances, you know. And then you go last night again, it was the same. As we were by far the better side again, but we didn't take our chances. And you know the way it is, that the league is so tight, whoever gets the first goal for me really will go on to win the game. So listen, we just need to start taking our chances, and listen, once we start taking our chances and the goals start flying in, I've no doubt that we'll be up there about challenging. I know for supporters and all that, it's probably difficult to look and see we're after losing two of the first three, but people have to remember this is a very young squad. You know, we've only come together really the last 6 months or whatever, I suppose, really, you know, since Colin has come in and taken over, and it's going to take time. I suppose, you know, I know Cork City fans over the years were used to winning constantly, and know, times have changed. Like I said, it's a young side, and listen, I think supporters, you know, need to give this young side a chance, and no doubt they'll come good from.
Yeah, some positives to take, though. I mean, like the two centre halves who've just come in, George Heaven, Jonas Hacklin, playing very, very well. George has been very, very solid since he came in. Jonas came in last night, looked like he'd been playing League of Ireland football for a couple of years.
Yeah, to be fair, the two boys, you see him in training every week. They're, like I said, like Colin was saying, the football wise they're absolutely fantastic, and you know they love challenging the air for headers. They're aggressive, but not two very, very good centre halves. And like luckily for me, I've been behind the two of them for the games that they've played in, and you know I can see the qualities that the both of them have. And as I said earlier, the more games they get, the better they become. And no doubt the team will become better because of the two lads.
Yeah, Stephen Beattie playing right back as well. Does he still see himself as a right winger, or has he settled into the fact that he's now a right back?
I'd say he's after settling into the right back position now, because as he's getting that bit older now, he seems to be dropping further and further back. I remember when he first signed for us, he was a 10, then he was a right winger, now he's a right back.
So he'll be on goal next.
Go after that. You know, it's the age thing with Beach, you know. He's looking very old, he's aging, so no, beats to be fair, you know, a great lad and good crack in the training ground, in the dressing room and all that. And, you know, I, as you can tell, the supporters obviously absolutely love him, and you know, same with all the players, he's a great lad to have around. And listen, once keep him fit and he's flying for the season, he's another great asset to the team.
And Mark, Jack Walsh last night making his first start for the club, former Avondale man, and reminded me of a former Avondale man who played with Cork City, Mark O'Sullivan, very similar players, and looked very, very tidy last night.
Yeah, Jack, to be fair, was outstanding last night. All he was showing was a goal to top off his man of match performance, to be fair. He came in, you know, he played 20 minutes last weekend, Cabin Teely, done very well, came in last night, was absolutely outstanding. But I'm not surprised by it. I only know Jack a short time. I didn't see much of Jack when he was playing with Avondale and that, but from what I've seen of him in training, his finishing is outstanding, his aggression to win a ball is outstanding, his hold-up play is brilliant. You know, he's a great lad, and I really hope he does well for himself and for Cork City, because I know he's had a few difficult years with injuries and all that, but looking at him now in training and the games, the last couple of games we've seen him playing, he looks like a really fantastic player. And you know, hopefully he can stay fit and rock on and banging goals for us, and hopefully, like I said earlier in the interview there, we'll be up there challenging.
And Shelburne coming to town now on Friday, always good competitive games against Shelburne. Remember all those rivalries going down the years with Shell, so looking forward to them coming to Turner's Cross. But just a bit of luck needed on Friday night now, and a win would certainly kind of lift the mood and kind of, I suppose, change the narrative around this Cork City team at the moment.
Yeah, you look at it like if one win changes everything, you know. So like Shell game is a massive game. You know, well, I think there's only a point between the two of us at the minute, down mid table and that. But anytime you play Shell, there's a massive game. When it was back in 2010, when we were going for the first division back, 2010 was against Shell, they were fantastic games. Even go back earlier, when it's Cork City and Shell's in the Premier Division, they were always the main games. And listen, we're back together now again in the first division, and no doubt these are the two games. These are the games that people will love to see him, love to watch, and no doubt if the fans were loaded to Turner Square, there'll be a full house, especially against Shells, you know. So listen, it's a huge game Friday night. We're going to have to get the 3 points. And hopefully we can do that.
Yeah, I can't wait for that. The Big Rebel Sleepout happening on April 24th. For more details on that, visit focusireland.ie, or you can get more information on corkcityfc.ie and from redfm.ie as well, helping homeless people across Cork City and county and further afield as well. Mark, thanks very much for talking to us on the Big Red Bench this evening.
No problem, Rory. Cheers for that.
Yeah, always a great pleasure to talk to Mark McNulty, and the Big Rebel Sleepout happening on the 24th of April. And as I mentioned, for more details on that, check out focusireland.ie, and you can help raise funds by sleeping out in your back garden for Focus Ireland and all the fantastic work they do surrounding homelessness in Cork City and County. I've been commentating on the Cork City games with Dan Murray. The home games for LAY TV, been really, really enjoying it. So we're back in action this coming Friday night against Shelburne at Turner's Cross. So you can tune into us there. It's been really, really enjoyable. So hopefully Cork City can get back to winning ways. So we're decent enough against Athlone Town on Friday night. Just couldn't get that goal. Just that little bit of luck that they're currently lacking. But it's looking good. And as I say, Jack Walsh looked very, very good up front. Just when they click, when they gel, I think they'll start winning, start scoring goals. So looking forward to Shelburne come to town this coming Friday night. Just before we get out of here, the teams from Sheffield United and Arsenal, which is just about to kick off, Dave Eason.
Arsenal make 5 changes from the Europa League draw with Slavia Prague, with one eye surely on the second leg. 3 of the back 4 drop out: Cedric, Gabriel and Bayern. Smith Rowe and Willian also drop out. In come Chambers, Marie, Ceballos, Martinelli and Pepe, with Odegaard not wrist, and no Aubameyang either, he's ill apparently. 3 changes for Sheffield United, with McBurney, Bogle and Jagielka replaced by Burke, Egan and Ampadu. At Bramall Lane is Sheffield United against Arsenal.
Right, that's pretty much it from the Big Red Bench tonight. Thanks very much indeed for listening to our show this evening. Our podcast will be online very shortly. You can get that on redfm.ie or from wherever you download your podcast. We're back next Saturday from 6. It'll be a cracking show with Ireland taking on France. We'll have all the reaction from Cork City and Cove Ramblers as well. Conor Halpin's a happy man after that United win. He's up next with Green on Red. Enjoy the rest of your evening, folks. We'll talk to you next week.
The Big Red Bench.
Game on.
Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m.